In our last episode, we took a brief look at the Roman Catholic Jesuit missions to the Far East, namely to Japan, China, Vietnam, and India. We encountered the revolutionary approach of mission work by Alessandro Vignano and his spiritual heirs, Michele Ruggieri and Matteo Ricci. Their accommodationist approach to evangelism, where the gospel was communicated by seeking to build a cultural bridge with the high civilizations of the Far East, that officially was suppressed by Rome, even though it had amazing success in planting healthy and vibrant churches. So healthy was the church in Japan that it came under fire from a fierce resurgence in Japanese nationalism that expelled the Jesuits, persecuted the church, and drove it underground. But it wasn't just Jesuits who took the gospel to the Far East. From the dawn of the 17th century, both Dutch and English trading interests moved into Asia. Their commercial and military navies dominated those of other European nations at the time. The Dutch established bases in Indonesia and created a center at Jakarta. The Dutch East India Company was founded in 1602 and carried the Dutch Reformed Church to the East Indies. But don't assume that this means the Dutch conducted missionary work among the indigenous peoples. It means they merely carried their religious institutions with them and built chapels so that the Dutch nationals had a place to worship when they were doing business there. Any converts from among the native populations was by accident, rather than any kind of planned outreach. Dutch interests in the Far East were exclusively commercial. The English equivalent of the Dutch East India Company was the creatively named English East India Company. Though the directors of the company were suspicious of missionaries, they appointed chaplains to their trading communities. Now, this provided a later opening for those with missionary vision in England and India, such as the members of Parliament. You may remember William Wilberforce and Charles Grant, an employee of the company. Now, two outstanding East India Company chaplains were Henry Martin and Claudius Buchanan. Martin was a leading Cambridge intellect, a winner of several academic prizes. He and other Cambridge students were influenced by the long ministry of Charles Simeon, whose preaching urged that the gospel be taken to all peoples. Martin was a brilliant linguist and translator. He was appointed a chaplain in 1805. He translated the New Testament into Urdu and Persian and prepared an Arabic version before his early death from tuberculosis at only 31. His Indian assistant, Abdul Masih, he converted from Islam to become a Christian missionary and advocate of the faith. He was ordained in 1825 as the very first Indian Anglican clergyman. Now, many others were inspired by Martin's life of scholarship and devotion. Again, he died at just 31. William Carey, who is often regarded as the father of Protestant English missions, was both a shoemaker and Baptist preacher in Northamptonshire. He arrived in India in 1793. He was soon joined by two other Baptist giants, Joshua Marshman and William Ward, making what came to be known as the Semapore Trio. Semapore, that is a region where they lived and they worked. The trio greatly admired the Moravians and shaped their community on the Moravian model. Now, Carey's passage to India had been denied by the East India Company, which was the de facto English government of the holdings in India, with their own hired army enforcing their will on the regions that they operated in. It wouldn't be till later that the British colonies in India came under the control of the crown. The East India Company opposed Carey's longing to take the gospel to the Indians. Now, chaplains for the British in India were fine, but they didn't want to foment any kind of hostility with the face of their trading partners. They didn't want any, thing upsetting their trade. And Carey had one goal in going to India, and that was to evangelize the lost. His passion to raise support in England for foreign missions led to his being derided by critics like Sidney Smith, a clergyman and author of satire who wrote for the Edinburgh Review. But by steady perseverance, monumental labor at biblical translation, long suffering through many family tragedies and the loss of precious manuscripts by fire, Carey faced down all of his critics, became professor of Sanskrit at Fort William College, and earned the accolade from Bishop Stephen Neal, himself a missionary in India, saying, quote, "In the whole history of the church, no nobler man has ever given himself to the service of the Redeemer," unquote. For North Americans, an equivalent figure to Carey as a pioneer was the great missionary to Burma, Adoniram Judson. Judson received his inspiration to become a missionary from reading the sermons of Claudius Buchanan in 1809. After ordination as a Congregationalist minister, he applied to the American Board of Commissioners for Foreign Missions. On his voyage to India, he and his wife adopted a Baptist statement of faith. On arrival in India, he was baptized, having made his change of mind known to William Carey. Judson was refused permission to work by the East India Company as a Baptist missionary in India. He began work in Rangoon in 1813. His work among the Karen people met with a positive response. The first Karen to be baptized was Kotha Bew, who came from a background of violent crime. Bew became a notable evangelist, and the Karen became the largest Christian group, and in Myanmar, numbering some 200,000 Christians in over 1,000 churches. Judson himself became a missionary icon and hero in the mid-19th century North America. China closed its doors to foreigners of all kinds after imperial edicts against Christian preaching in 1720. Robert Morrison was the lone Protestant missionary from 1807, often at risk of his life. Although the East India Company was hostile to his mission, in 1809 he was employed by them as an interpreter so that he could remain on Chinese soil. With the help of William Milne, he translated the entire Bible into Chinese and created a Chinese dictionary. It became a standard work for language studies. He and Milne founded an Anglo-Chinese school in Malacca. But any missionary incursion into wider China was impossible until the treaties of the mid-19th century opened the country, only by slow degrees, really. First, the so-called treaty ports became accessible in 1842 in the Treaty of Nanking, forced on China by British commercial interests. The Chinese were desperate for opium from India, supplied by the British, which was a major source of revenue to them, but devastating to the Chinese, as drugs, of course, always are. A bit later, the Treaty of Tientsin opened the interior to missionaries, preparing the way for the China Inland Mission. James Hudson Taylor was born in Yorkshire, England, to a devout Methodist family. He trained as a doctor, but before he was qualified, he offered himself as a missionary to the China Evangelization Society. Because of political conditions in China during the Taiping Rebellion, regarded by many as a pro-Christian movement, he was sent to Shanghai in 1853. Hudson Taylor was inspired by Carl Gutzlaff, who'd traveled to the Chinese interior between 1833 and 39 as a freelance missionary. Gutzlaff was a German who'd been educated at a Moravian school. Drawn to the Far East by the urge to see China won to Christ, he began with the Netherlands Missionary Society in 1824 by serving in Thailand, where he translated the Bible into Thai in 3 years. In 1828, he broke with the Netherlands Missionary Society because they wouldn't send him to China. From his perspective, that's why he was in the Far East. So he became a freelance missionary, distributing Chinese literature along the coast. He became an interpreter for the East India Company in Shanghai and helped negotiate the Treaty of Nanjing. He recruited Chinese nationals as evangelists to the interior and raised funds for their support through his writings in Europe, only to find that many of his recruits had deceived him and taken the money for other purposes. Although discredited in the eyes of some, Gutzlaff's strategy of using nationals as Christian workers was sound. No one doubted his missionary zeal. Hudson Taylor looked on him as the grandfather of the China Inland Mission and its work in the interior provinces. Now, hearkening back to the accommodationist policy of Alignano, Taylor experimented with identification in Chinese dress and the queue. That's that pigtail hairstyle worn by Chinese men at that time. But Taylor caught grief from other members of his missionary community. In 1857, he resigned from the China Evangelization Society that he'd been working with. Stirred deeply by the needs of the Chinese of the interior, Taylor founded the China Inland Mission in 1865, aiming to put 2 missionaries in each province, areas that were just recently opened to foreigners after the Treaty of Tientsin. He was now a fully qualified doctor and married to Maria Dyer, daughter of a missionary and a leader in her own right. He set out with a party of 16 from London to Shanghai in 1866, narrowly avoiding total loss by shipwreck. From the beginning, the China Inland Mission was to be a so-called faith mission with no public appeals for funds. and its missionaries accepted the absolute, if gently applied, authority of Hudson Taylor, described by some as the Ignatius Loyola of Protestant missions. The China Inland Mission came to number over 800 missionaries, including Methodists, Baptists, Anglicans, Presbyterians, and others. It planted churches that had a membership of some 80,000 by 1897. The public profile of the China Inland Mission was greatly enhanced in the 1880s by the arrival of the Cambridge Seven, two of whom were well-known sports heroes and popularized as making great sacrifices for the cause of Christ. C.T. Studd was one of these, later to found the World Evangelization Crusade and the Heart of Africa Missions, which worked in the Belgian Congo. Hudson Taylor's publication, China's Millions, achieved a circulation of 50,000 and helped put the mission in front of the public. The society suffered heavily in the Nationalist Boxer Rebellion of 1898 to 1900. A total of 200 missionaries, many of them Roman Catholics, and some 30,000 Chinese Christians lost their lives. China Inland Mission lost 58 missionaries and several children. Even with this tragic setback, the mission continued to be an influential group under its second director, Dixon Host, one of the Cambridge Seven. In 1949, all missionary personnel were expelled by the communists. Hudson Taylor is described by the eminent church historian Kenneth Scott Latterett as, quote, one of the four or five most influential foreigners who came to China in the 19th century for any purpose, religious or secular, unquote.